budget, in my opinion, signals to the world that the Trump foreign policy is one of disengagement.
Is Donald Trump turning his back on the world? It's Friday, March 29th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Also ahead, the army worm invades Asia. Time running out for Indonesia's orangutans, and African migrants grow more desperate. That and more, all on today's VOA Asia. A senior U.S. official warns that prospects for salvaging the 1987 Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty are dimming, that as Russia continues to violate the accord. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
A last-minute reprieve for the INF Treaty appears increasingly unlikely. U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for International Security and Non-Proliferation Christopher Ford says the time for Russia to take the steps necessary for rescuing this treaty is shrinking dramatically and depressingly.
We are doing nothing but responding to an ongoing and persisting pattern of Russian violations of the treaty, things to which the United States has been drawing attention and trying to engage with Russia for many years now across two different administrations of different political flavors and in something on the order of 30 different diplomatic engagements with our counterparts in Moscow.
Washington says it will withdraw from the INF treaty by August if Moscow does not fulfill its obligations. The Cold War era pact has been a pillar of European security for more than 30 years. It bans the development and deployment of ground-launched nuclear missiles with ranges between 500 and 5,500 kilometers. Europe is fearful of the rupture of the treaty. It has called on both the United States and Russia to remain constructively engaged in trying to preserve it. Ford says all efforts to turn Russia's violations around have proved futile. Russia says it strictly observes the treaty's provisions and does not allow violations. Ford finds one bright spot in the midst of these bilateral nuclear disputes. He says both the United States and Russia are complying with the essential limits of the START, Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty. This accord limits each side to 1,550 strategic nuclear warheads. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. Thailand's election commission says the pro-army Palang Pracharat party won the popular vote in Sunday's general election. The Afghan government has recalled its ambassador and summoned Pakistan's deputy ambassador to Afghanistan to lodge formal protests. Radioactive contamination from Japan's Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant has drifted as far north as the Bering Strait. And Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi says the country has shot down a satellite in low orbit. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more at voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. U.S. President Donald Trump awarded the military's highest honor for valor, the Medal of Honor, to U.S. Army Staff Sergeant Travis Atkins this week, who died in Iraq in 2007 while shielding his fellow soldiers from a suicide attack. Mr. Trump presented the medal to Atkins' son Trevor Oliver at the White House on Wednesday. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb has that story.
It's always hard. You know, I think about him on a daily basis.
Trevor Oliver was just 10 years old when his father, Army Staff Sergeant Travis Atkins, deployed to Iraq for a second time.
He was a very, very strong person. He had the most courage I know out of anybody. And yeah, no, he was a very, very loving father and the blueprint of a soldier.
The Army was Atkins' calling. On the battlefield, men like former Staff Sergeant Stuart Hollingsworth thought of him as a big brother, who always led by example.
You know, as he's asking you to do things, he was already doing it.
But ahead of his second deployment, his father, Jack Atkins, a Vietnam veteran himself, urged him to switch to a less risky Army assignment.
You wouldn't hear of it. He said, Dad, I'm infantry. That's where I belong. That's who I am.
On June 1st, 2007, Atkins and his squad encountered two insurgents in Iraq. Atkins fought in hand-to-hand combat, wrapping his arms around one of them and slamming him to the ground. Atkins then positioned his body as a human shield and braced for what was next. Former Sergeant Sandeo saw the fight from the gun turret of their vehicle.
It was obvious he knew what was coming. It turned out to be a grenade detonated suicide vest, and he had that split second where his instinct took over, and he sacrificed himself to protect myself and the others who were present.
To his battle buddies Hollingsworth and Ayo, no one is more deserving of this revered award.
You know, there's gallantry, intrepidude, another fancy term that they like to use when describing these things, and he's every bit of that and more.
Travis was a true hero. He was an American hero. I hope that he's looking down and, you know, can see that I'm trying to make the best of the opportunity that he gave me.
To his mother, Elaine Atkins, and the family, the Medal of Honor means nothing compared to the honor and respect of Atkins' fellow soldiers. Respect for the way he lived, the way he served, the way he made the ultimate sacrifice.
I'm grateful he did the job that he did and that he saved those young men. He was a good soldier, and he did what he needed to do.
The medal, they say, brings closure for a sacrifice not forgotten by a grateful nation. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
Happening now in Asia, major stock markets closed lower on Thursday. Japan's Nikkei 225 dropped 1.61%, while the TOPIX index fell 1.59%. The Shanghai Composite fell 0.92%, and Hong Kong's Hang Seng index was about 0.2% higher in its final hour of trading. You're listening to VOA Asia. And we're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is defending President Trump's proposed budget cuts to diplomacy and foreign aid from strong criticism from both Republican and Democratic lawmakers. The chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, Elliot Engel, told Mr. Pompeo the president's budget was dead as soon as it arrived on Capitol Hill. VOA's diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
$11 billion in proposed cuts to U.S. foreign aid and the State Department were the focus in Wednesday's congressional hearings. The president's 2020 budget request would cut money for refugee resettlement, global health care, and other programs. But the Democratic chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee and the Republican ranking member opposed the cuts, so they may not be approved by Congress.
This budget, in my opinion, signals to the world that the Trump foreign policy is one of disengagement, of pulling back from places where American leadership is needed the most. And we know other countries that don't share our values, countries like China and Russia and Iran. Those countries are more than happy to fill the void.
However, I do agree with the chairman. I believe that certain cuts have unintended consequences that cost us more in the long term. This is especially true of cuts to critical humanitarian and developmental assistance programs that promote democracy, support economic growth, and provide life-saving resources to bolster stability in areas at risk of terrorism and extremist ideologies.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said he is well aware of the threats posed by China and Russia, but said the administration has to be mindful of the burden on American taxpayers.
We'll make sure that China and Russia cannot gain a strategic advantage in an age of renewed great power competition. We'll continue our progress toward the final fully verified denuclearization of North Korea. And we'll support the people of Venezuela as they work toward a peaceful restoration of their democracy.
Pompeo said the proposed budget requests new authority to support a democratic transition in Venezuela, including up to $500 million for foreign assistance accounts. Cindy Sain, VOA News, the State Department.
And you're listening to VOA Asia.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. You can listen to Encounter following VOA News, either on the radio or online at voanews.com/encounter. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to encounter@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This news alert from VOA Asia, global carbon levels reached a record high last year as surging demand for fossil fuels in Asia sent emissions soaring. This according to the International Energy Agency. 33.1 gigatons of carbon dioxide were released into the atmosphere in 2018. This is VOA Asia. And VOA Asia continues. Wildlife experts are warning that the world's rarest great ape, discovered only in 2017, will not survive the building of a $1.6 billion hydroelectric power plant and dam in the middle of its remaining habitat in Sumatra, Indonesia. Only 800 of the newly identified Tapanuli orangutans remain in the wild, all in northern Sumatra's Batang Toru Forest. In the same area, forest clearing has already begun for the project, which is being financed and built by state-controlled Chinese companies under China's Belt and Road Investment Initiative. As Jack Hewson reports for VOA, critics say it's the latest example of unsustainable development perpetuated by Chinese investment in Southeast Asia.
This is North Sumatra's rainforest, home to the Tapanuli orangutan. The Tapanuli are a new subspecies of the great ape, only discovered in 2017 in an area named Batang Toru. But with only 800 left, they are critically endangered. On top of this, a Chinese-backed hydro dam development is being built in the middle of their habitat. Although it will generate renewable energy, scientists and environmentalists say it could cause the orangutan's extinction.
Pembangunan PLTA itu merusak tempat mereka.
The project will destroy their habitat. The hydro dam will divide up the orangutan populations from each other.
Cross-area mating is necessary for orangutans to sustain their health, and isolation will only cause inbreeding, which is dangerous for the offspring. Activists also claim an earthquake could collapse the dam. The project is causing divisions in the community, particularly in downstream areas vulnerable to flooding. Local rubber farmer Arianto guided us past security into the dam site to show us his former farmland. He says he cooperated with the company initially, but then they didn't pay enough land compensation and did not give him a job as promised.
I reject this construction project because they violated my rights and lied about hiring us. Secondly, the land acquisition issue is not settled yet.
Talking to people in Batang Toru, we found that those who have been given work support the project and those who have not are against it or are indifferent. But very few people seem to care much about endangered species. As we walked out through the concession area, we were spotted by security. Heated words were exchanged with our guides for bringing in a foreign journalist, and we were quickly escorted out of the construction site. Here in Medan, NGOs have mounted a legal challenge against the dam, claiming the environmental assessment for the project was forged. Supporting them is Onrizal Onrizal, a scientist from the University of North Sumatra. Onrizal says he warned the company of the presence of endangered species, but says they did not include this in their final report and forged his signature here on the document.
Dokumen ini bukan saja bias.
So this document is not only biased, but false. Environmental assessment should be scientific research, but now they have falsified this. To me, that's an insult to science and scientists.
Despite Onrizal's allegations, a court in Medan this month failed even to consider his testimony as evidence and ruled in favor of the developers, North Sumatra Hydro Energy, or NSHE. In the capital, Jakarta, I met with Wimar Witola, the company's spokesperson, to ask him about Onrizal's allegations.
Onrizal is somebody I don't care to comment about in terms of personality. Maybe you should investigate just who and what he is. People have motives. You have motives. I have motives. Let each follow the motives.
Okay, well, your motive is to build a dam, which you've already been...
My motive is to speak for the company who is going to build a dam, which has been approved by various scientific studies and the government and the people of North Sumatra.
Okay, so you have a clear, your company has a clear motivation to build this dam.
Oh yeah.
Which is a financial one as well. What motivation does Onrizal have to say that his signature was forged?
I do not know the motivations of people whose character are not like mine. In Indonesia, we have many of those.
With an ongoing court case and the threat to biodiversity, the Batang Toru Hydro Dam remains mired in controversy. Much of the funding has come from the Bank of China, raising questions over the sustainability of the Belt and Road Investment Initiative. Jack Houston, reporting for VOA News, Batang Toru, Indonesia.
This news alert from VOA Asia, an insect called the fall armyworm is spreading from Africa to Asia. In 2016, fall armyworms ate up to half of some African farmers' maize, sorghum, and millet. Now the insects are spreading through Yemen, China, and Thailand. All the big stories coming your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, a group of experts meeting for the first time to examine the pros and cons of human genome editing says it would be irresponsible to engage in the procedure at this time. Lisa Schlein again reports for VOA.
Late last year, a Chinese scientist created an international storm when he announced he had created the first gene-edited babies. He said he had edited the DNA of the twin girls to protect them from HIV. The WHO panel warns this procedure is too risky and should not be attempted before a system of strong rules governing this technique are established. Co-chair of the advisory committee, Margaret Hamburg, says the group has agreed on a set of core principles. She says the panel recommends WHO create a registry for human genome editing research. Under this system, she says scientific work in these technologies would be registered in a transparent way.
We think it's very important to establish this registry to get a better sense of the research that's going on around the world, greater transparency about it, and in fact, greater accountability in terms of assuring that research meets standards in terms of science and ethics.
The experts agree this would preclude the kind of secrecy that surrounded the work of the Chinese scientist. She says the panel would like this transparency to extend to the publication of manuscripts that emerge from important research. She says publishers will be asked to ensure the research has been registered with WHO before it is publicized. Hamburg says developing the guidelines on human genome editing is a process that will take about 18 months to complete. She says it is a difficult but urgent task that must be carried out in a thoughtful, comprehensive manner. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Finally, five migrants were arrested in Malta after they took control of a merchant ship that had rescued them and more than 100 others in the Mediterranean. A Maltese Special Operations Unit of the nation's armed forces stormed the ship early this morning. 12 children and 19 women were among the migrants. The migrants were rescued by the ship off the coast of Libya and refused to return to Tripoli. The captain of the rescue ship said he and his crew were threatened and were ordered to take the migrants to Malta or Italy. However, Italy would not allow the migrants to disembark there. VOA's Kim Lewis spoke with reporter Catherine Field about the incident and if the hijacking is a signal of a trend of more drastic measures being taken by migrants.
This particular tanker was just north of Libya when it took on board a group of some 100 migrants who had been in the area, who'd been trying to make it to either Malta or to Italy. Then you were stormed by these migrants who took control of the vessel, and eventually it was brought into Maltese waters, and it was there that special forces went aboard and took back control of the vessel.
Why did something like this happen now?
There are several reasons. One is that we're coming into the calmer weather period in Europe. It's coming into the spring, so more migrants are attempting to make that crossing across the Mediterranean. Another reason that is being put about is that the so-called Operation Sophia, that's the European Union's coast guard that operates ships within the Mediterranean that picks up and assists migrants, that operation is going to be curtailed in the next couple of days. That whole operation will now continue without naval ships, but will just have air surveillance. So it's felt that these migrants perhaps felt that this was the only possibility that they would have for being able to get to Malta. Let's not forget, a lot of people have been dying in the Mediterranean. Last year, 2,300 died, 290 the year before. These are people that weren't picked up by these so-called rescue vessels. So people are surmising now that if there are no vessels there to pick up these migrants, that they're going to take more extreme measures and start hijacking any vessel that is in the area.
Well, hijacking vessels is certainly not going to gain them a lot of sympathy. For instance, Italy, I understand, is not going to allow them there. So what is going to happen to these migrants?
Well, they will be processed as per all the other migrants who have come in, and they will either be allowed to come and stay in Europe or they will be sent back. And this is really one of the criteria that the European Union says. That's why they set up the EU Emergency Trust for Africa. This is a fund which gives money, actually, to these migrants to go home. It has already given funding for some 60,000 would-be migrants to return to their homes in Africa, and that's on top of more than 5 million would-be migrants who have received basic support for staying in their home countries. So it's a very complicated picture, especially as you rightly say, Italy has said it will not let ships dock at its ports, and you've also got NGOs such as Amnesty International, who has said, look, all this is the fault of EU governments who will not take responsibility for these migrants. You've got other NGOs, such as Mediterranea, who used to have a rescue ship in the Mediterranean, saying that these countries, such as the European Union, are just turning their back on fundamental rights. They are just turning their backs on human beings that are fleeing. So it's a very complicated picture, and particularly with the EU now saying it's going to curb its assistance for these migrants, because essentially what that means is these migrants will now be forced to either stay in Libya or be taken back to Libya. And there it is known that the centres for processing and for these places where migrants are held really do fall short on international standards of well-being and how you treat would-be migrants.
Reporter Catherine Field in Paris.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers using a special instrument on the European Southern Observatory's Very Large Telescope Interferometer were able to observe the complex atmosphere of an exoplanet 129 light-years from Earth. The exoplanet, called HR8799E, was discovered in 2010. It's considered to be a super Jupiter that's only 30 million years old and has a temperature of about 1,000 degrees Celsius. The high temperature is thought to be from leftover energy from its formation and a greenhouse effect produced by its atmosphere, which the astronomers say is filled with clouds of iron and silicates that churn in a global storm. The instrument used to make the observations is called Gravity. The device combines the signals of the four telescopes of the Very Large Telescope Array to create a super telescope. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Well, that is VOA Asia for today and for this week. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back with you again next week. We hope you will as well. Until then, have a great weekend.